What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Fish Bites, the Miami Herald's Miami Marlins show. I'm Andre Fernandez, Deputy Sports Editor, your host, along with Jordan McPherson, Miami Marlins beat writer, who now joins us from another stop on the road. This one he has been to before. This isn't one of the ballparks you have left to cross off. You're very familiar with Miller Park. How you doing, Jordan? How's Milwaukee?
The about 2 hours I've been here so far, it's been very rainy. South Florida obviously understands what it's like for it to be raining all the time, but it's that steady rain where it's not drizzling, but it's just enough to be annoying. So luckily I'm close enough to the ballpark, knocking this out and then getting ready for another pivotal series for this Marlins team as they try to stay in the playoff hunt.
So since Miller Park has a roof, basically what you're saying is this is just screwing up your beer runs and your food runs at this point, right?
Yeah, well, I probably wasn't going to do anything today. That was going to be probably tomorrow or Wednesday just because of the quick get-in and then knocking this out and everything else I usually do on Mondays, regardless of whether I'm home or on the road. But Tuesday or Wednesday, it's probably whether or not it's going to happen.
And besides, you'll be fine. I was there a few years ago in April when it was snow on the ground and ice everywhere. Mm-hmm. So this is a better time of year for you to be there anyway.
Yeah,
so
no doubt about it.
You'll be fine. But I'll tell you who's not fine. And it's an unfortunate time for this to happen. Sandy Alcantara, who unfortunately went to the injured list, and Jorge Soler, of course, as well. But really, let's talk about who has to step up, of course. But at the same time, it's a shame because you get to this point. We saw flashes of Sandy being the old Sandy, and now this is a tough one because you're still not just forget about the playoff hunt, but let's say they do get there, you're without your ace going in there potentially in the playoffs. And that's going to hurt a lot.
Yeah, it definitely does. So Sandy Alcantara, he went on the 15-day injured list on Wednesday with a right forearm flexor strain is how the team described it. The basics of it, we don't have a full timetable on him yet. He's not throwing at the moment, although Skip did say over the weekend in Philly that he could begin playing catch soon, which to me is the best case scenario this year that he'd be throwing after just a few days of being sidelined, but still haven't actually seen him throw yet. So again, I'm holding off anything until we know exactly what's going on. And the Marlins are at this point are just preparing for what potentially could be the rest of the season, which is about a month without Sandy, which it's tough when, again, he was their workhorse, whether the results were there or not, he was still that steady piece in the rotation that is still filled with a lot of young guys, as we've talked about week after week, where they're trying to monitor innings, they're using a six-man rotation to make sure that Jesus Luzardo is good for the long run, Braxton Garrett's good for the long run, Yuri Perez is good for the long run. Edward Cabrera, who is back, he ended up replacing Sandy on the roster when the IL move happened, that he's ready for the long run. But without Sandy, it makes things that much more difficult to figure things out. They're still going with a six-man rotation. It's just they're going with some bullpen days using bulk guys at this point. Obviously, they still have Luzardo, Braxton Garrett, Yuri Perez, and Johnny Cueto are their main four. Edward Cabrera, interestingly enough, his first time out, they used an opener for him before he came in and threw four shutout innings. Mm-hmm. And then they're using Brian Hoeing in the second opener spot, which they've done a couple times. Brian Hoeing feels more comfortable coming out of the bullpen and can still give the multiple innings. So it makes sense, and it's understandable for that part of it. But it's still, you don't really have that backup plan anymore. You're basically down to your main guys at this point in the rotation. And you lost arguably your best pitcher. He was the Cy Young Award winner last year. Results or whatever he did this year, obviously were not great, but you still know what you're going to get. You still know you're going to get 6-7 innings from Sandy no matter what. And it helps the bullpen, which is now going to probably be relied on a lot more with these younger guys who most likely getting capped at 6 innings if everything goes perfectly. So now you're going to be seeing a lot more multiple inning type things out of the pen or more guys being used on a more consistent basis down the stretch, which they were getting out of that juncture with Sandy doing well and some of the other guys stepping up. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they go through. They survived the first turn without him. They went 4-2 this past week without Sandy, taking 2-3 against the Dodgers, 2-3 against the Phillies. Now we have to see if they're able to maintain that as they get through, as they begin the second turn without Sandy Alcantara.
Yeah, and I mean, that's where, again, you know, the complete games are good, and you love to see that he's a kind of the throwback to those, to that kind of a pitcher that can endure. But at the same time, you always have a little bit of concern about the usage, and you hope it's not too serious in the long term. You want him to be a part of this for a while now. And it's kind of you have to balance now what's best for him too, you know, because you don't want to rush him back and then risk something worse, and then you lose your ace for the long run. But looking at that, you know, overall, some of these guys in the rotation have stepped up. They have had good years. And like you said, they're going to have to kind of keep an eye on both, you know, the innings levels as well as performance, not just that. But for Jorge Soler going on the impact, I mean, obviously they on the IL, I'm sorry, the impact of that is you lose that big bat. You lose that power that had been there the whole season and been such a big part of this lineup. So who do you kind of see there kind of filling in, especially these next few games? I mean, right now, this trip you're on right now with Milwaukee is no joke. And then, of course, you know, here come the Braves in Miami right after that.
Hey, the one thing I will say is the Marlins on this current 10-game run that they're going on, the 4-game sweep against the Nationals, taking 2-3 against LA and taking 2-3 against Philly. Soler only played in one of those games. And right. That game, he went 0 for 2 with two walks again in one of the wins against the Dodgers. So the Marlins, they've won 8 of their last 10, including taking 2 of 3 against two of the top teams in the National League. And they've done it with basically a complete collective effort. I mean, running down a few names, Brian De La Cruz, 3 home runs, 10 RBI over the last 10 games, including the go-ahead home run on Sunday against Philly. Jazz, 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 9 ribbies, 7 runs scored in 10 games. Jesus Sanchez, 3 home runs, 7 ribbies, 7 runs scored over 10 games. Jake Berger, 4 home runs. Garrett Hampson, 2 home runs, 4 RBI, hitting .321 over 9 games. Josh Bell hitting .308. Luis Arraez finally coming back to himself. He's hitting .351 over this 10-game stretch. Didn't play on Sunday. Had a foul ball off his foot late in the game on Saturday, and they just gave him a complete day off. But you're seeing a complete effort from the lineup. You're seeing the collective effort more so than just relying on the one big bat to make it happen. And again, 3, 6, 9, 13, 14, 15, 17, 18, 19 home runs over their last 10 games where they've gone 8-2. 0 of those coming from Jorge Soler. And to see a lot of the collective slug out of this group without the main guy who you're expecting to see the slug from, that's a very positive sign to show that they're able to sustain without him. And it also goes back to, again, the Josh Bell, Jake Berger acquired trade acquisitions. The two of them, they have 5 of the home runs. They have 4 doubles. They have, 5. They have 9 RBI between the two of them. My bad on that. 9 RBI and 5 home runs between the two of them. And again, you're seeing up and down the lineup guys who are contributing, even guys who, like, again, I go back to Brian De La Cruz and Jesus Sanchez being the main two that I want to highlight here, because everything goes back. Always the talk always centers around Luis Arraez with the batting title, Jorge Soler with the slug, Jazz being Jazz, and then Jake Berger and Josh Bell being the big boys who they acquired the deadline. De La Cruz and Sanchez entered the year as us thinking they're going to be platooning in left field most likely, with Avisaíl Garcia in right and Jazz in center. They're your two everyday corner outfielders now. And De La Cruz, I wrote about him to start Monday. He's sort of beginning to prove that he can be an everyday guy. He's among the top 25, top 30 in MLB in terms of doubles, in terms of he has 19 home runs this year, which is second on the Marlins only to Soler. He had that great run through June and now struggled a little bit July and August, then finally heating back up in September. You're seeing that with him. And then Jesus Sanchez, a power lefty who's learning how to just take what the game's giving him and not just swing for the fences every single time. If the two of them are able to hone things in and be quality guys in the 5, 6, 7 spots in the lineup, it just gives the Marlins more length that they're definitely going to need now, especially with Jorge Soler sidelined indefinitely.
Yeah, both guys, I mean, they've benefited from being in a better lineup. And at the same time, those things that they're doing have made it a better lineup too, more balanced, a little more options there. I'm not worried about that. Like, I'm not worried about so much, you're right, like the Soler thing. I am worried about not having your veteran, you're not veteran, but you know what I mean? Like, you're more experienced guy.
On this point, he's the veteran. Again, let's just call him he's the veteran. Really, here.
I guess because I still think of Sandy as a young pitcher overall and like league wide. But yeah, I mean, not only that, but a guy who can save your bullpen so many innings when he's on. That I'm telling you that if he's not there, if he doesn't come back, and I know we don't know a timetable for certain, but with pitchers just shutting you down already for a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is, then obviously requires a ramping up period again. So that's going to take time. So let's just say it's game one, where you are right now, maybe, or at Wrigley Field or whatever. Who's on the mound for the Marlins in game one? And not only that, who are your top three guys that you roll with in the postseason? If you're Jordan McPherson doing their pencil, you know, writing in their rotation right now, who are your top three?
Number one for me at this point, if Sandy's not there, it has to be Jesus Luzardo. To me, there's almost no debate there at this point. He's been probably their most consistent pitcher this whole season. He's having a breakout year. I've actually started breaking down some of the numbers with him. He's among the top, basically top 10 in the National League and top five in some cases in ERA. Strikeout percentage, he's in the top five across all of baseball. I believe I have those numbers right here. Just in general, he's been hands down one of the more consistent guys. He has 10 outings this year of at least six innings, giving up one run or fewer. He has 181 strikeouts on the year in 155 innings. He has a 28.2% strikeout rate, which is fifth in the National League. 15 total quality starts, 10 starts of at least six innings with one run or fewer. Only five pitchers in the National League have more. Swing and miss rate 31%. His slider specifically, swing and miss rate 50.6%. Only Spencer Strider has a better swing and miss rate on a slider than Jesus Luzardo. And again, we saw these flashes at the end of last year when he came back from his forearm injury, and he just carried it over into this year. And he's shown the durability this year. He's going into start 29 about a few hours after we record this. So his outing will impact these numbers a little bit, but he's on pace to go for 30 starts for the first time in his career. He has a chance. He's 19 strikeouts away from the Marlins single season record for strikeouts by a lefty, 200 by Al Leiter. He could potentially become just the second Marlin lefty to ever get 200 strikeouts in a season. But so Jesus Luzardo, long story short, Jesus Luzardo is my number one.
Yeah. Pretty easy pick with the kind of season he's had. But yeah, who goes the second day?
If he's available, and again, I know the Marlins are monitoring him to make sure he's available, I would be going with Yuri Perez at number two. I would basically go similar to what Don Mattingly did in the 2020 season. Have your best guy in the mound game one, hope you get the win, and then have the younger guy in game two. They did Sixto Sanchez game two against the Cubs.
Right, the Sixto variation
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, in terms of just pure stuff with who you have, Yuri and Edward Cabrera are your two and three in terms of stuff, which also makes game three the interesting part because they used an opener for Edward Cabrera during his first outing back. And I'm curious to see if they keep doing that the rest of the way, just to see his comfort level coming out of the bullpen and being.
Well, remember, right. I was going to say, because I was going to set up the table after the second pitcher you said, and say, now your season's on the line in a 1-1. Now, who do you trust with? And then you do that again. I mean, I don't know. Do they do that? The opener strategy with the season on the line in a game three?
Yeah, I don't know. But also, it could set up the point where they have Braxton Garrett start game three. And then you have the opposite looks between the crafty lefty and the hard-throwing righty. Right. And basically have the two of them piggybacking one way or the other. Right. Braxton has experience coming out of the bullpen. Edward's starting to get experience coming out of the bullpen. You can basically pick who you feel the most comfortable with depending on what the opposing lineup is, and that gives you a creativity option for game three.
And depending on how Braxton looks that day or how he's pitching the first inning or so, that'll depend on how long you keep him in there too. It doesn't have to be one inning. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Braxton too, I mean, he's made a lot of strides this year. The added pitch, everything that really took him to another level that I think, really surprised a lot of people. I mean, remember this guy, we thought he went from before the injury when he first got drafted way back to – Can he, is he a fringe major league pitcher? Is he that good? This, that, and now look at him. No, I mean, this is a guy that now you're talking about putting him in there in the most pressure packed situation with the season on the line on the road in game three. I mean, that take, if you take a second to think back the history of the track record and the history of Braxton Garrett, to say he'd be put in that scenario, if it did happen, that's pretty remarkable considering the journey he's been on.
Yeah, and even just this year, I mean, he was the odd man out of the rotation coming out of spring training. He was the long man to start the year and didn't get into the rotation until Johnny Cueto got hurt. Right. So he had to basically – he needed somebody else to get injured in order to be able to get into the role and have that opportunity to establish himself this year. Heck, he got optioned down to the minor leagues after they had to use him as a long guy in the first series. And then Cueto gets hurt in his first start of the season, and then they immediately call him up and go, okay, you're in the rotation, Braxton, show us what you got. And wow, he's been – obviously, I mean, the Marlins have had a lot of under-the-radar breakthrough stories here this season, and Braxton Garrett has been my favorite to watch develop over this entire year. Again, he showed flashes at times when he got called up during the 2020 season, and then a little bit in the role, his role in 2021 and 2022. But to see him go basically become a full-time, full-fledged member of this rotation this year has been great to see, and it just solidifies things even moving forward. Because again, we're talking about Sandy going down. Again, they have other guys, Trevor Rogers. That was another guy who was supposed to be part of this group, and Braxton being there to help fill in one of those voids, it just gave the Marlins something that if Braxton didn't produce the way he is, who knows where they'd be right now.
Yeah, it would be a lot scarier to think of a lack of depth that they'd have in the rotation at this point without the emergence of what he's done. Let's look forward here a second. After the sweep of the Nats in four straight, won four of the next six to take both series with the Dodgers and the Phillies without Sandy, with Soler, like you said, playing in just one game. And now they're still half a game back, but they're right there in the fight. I mean, it shows you how much you have to win down the stretch, because we were talking about how they sort of stayed afloat, you know, losing a few games before. Now it's the other way around. If they hadn't done as well as they did, we're not even having this conversation right now about playoffs or anything like that. We're already probably looking at 2024 and lamenting, it's another year that they missed the playoffs. Right now they had to stay in it. By staying that good, I mean, what they've done, and then if you look at it, the success that they've had, I mean, outside of Atlanta, which they're 1-9 against this year, you look at every opponent left on the schedule as an opportunity because of the way that they've fared well. I mean, you wrote it again, they have fared pretty well against some of the National League's best.
Yeah, not just some of them. All of them not named the Atlanta Braves. Obviously, they're 1-9 against Atlanta. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, look at every other team that's either in a playoff spot or still in the hunt. LA Dodgers, second best team in the National League. Marlins split went 3-3 against them. Haven't faced Milwaukee. They've got seven games against them, which is going to create some ripple effects in the playoff hunt. Philly, top wild card. They went 7-6 against them. Chicago Cubs, number two wild card spot. They went 4-2. Arizona Diamondbacks, the third wild card. They went 4-2. The San Francisco Giants and the Cincinnati Reds, the two teams just below them and the only other teams in the hunt. They split the series, went 3-3 against them. 500 or better against every team that could potentially be in the NL playoffs except the Atlanta Braves. That's just – it's incredible to think about that. And it also would make it just that much more crushing if they don't end up making the playoffs, because right, they show that they could basically hang with just about everybody else who they would be facing in that postseason.
Right. Yeah, and – prepare yourselves, because that's the craziness of the playoffs. And I remember years now, Seattle is a team that finally broke that jinx that made the playoffs, and now they're looking like a playoff team again this year. But you remember, there were more than once they fell a game short.
Yeah.
And how agonizing is that when you get that close in a long season? So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if every game really, you know, they've gone in with the every game matters attitude. But now it really does, because look how much it took just to stay in it. And, you know, looking at this week, I mean, the four with Milwaukee, seven overall coming up with Milwaukee, but specifically this week, the four they have now, and then Atlanta. Can they even, for standings purposes, it doesn't matter as far as, like, beating what it means to beat the Braves, but they need those wins. Can they beat the Braves? Have you seen anything where maybe, just maybe, they can sneak out at least maybe one or two of these to pad their record and get a few of these valuable wins?
Yeah, the hope is, best case scenario, you take at least three in Milwaukee to set yourself up for, to give yourself that little bit of a buffer with the Braves.
Right.
That's, I mean, if they can take three against Milwaukee, and again, they have Jesus Lazaro going today or on Monday, the day we're recording this. It should be Edward Cabrera either starting or in bulk on Tuesday and Braxton Garrett on Wednesday with a to-be-determined person on Thursday as, again, they maneuver through openers and monitoring innings and whatnot. These first three games are going to be critical because this is where you have your best three pitchers that you have left going in this series. If they can take three of four and somehow get one against the Braves, go 4-3 in this week, and then your next week you have three against the Mets and three against Milwaukee to close out your home schedule.
Yeah,
that's at minimum what you – at minimum they need four wins this week some way, shape, or form. And your best case is probably getting at least three of them against Milwaukee.
Yeah. I mean, Atlanta – And right now, do we know already who would project to be on the pitching side? Who would project for Atlanta? And that's, I mean, they're probably going to have to face Strider, I would think, at least in one of those games, right?
I would think so. I can check that now. The Braves are playing. And the thing is, with the Braves schedule, it's also interesting because they still have seven games left against the Phillies. They're playing a doubleheader on Monday and then two more games Tuesday and Wednesday. They can actually lock up the division if they take three games against Philly and knock that out. Let me see who they have
still got left, though. Yeah. You can't start benching people this early.
Oh, goodness, but, no, they still need to, need to hold off for home field advantage. They still need to work towards that.
They're gonna, we knew this going in because obviously the division schedule still, even though they don't play them as much, it's not 19 anymore. But the division schedule in the final month, it's very interesting to see how their Braves are, how much of an influence the Braves are going to have on the wild card picture. Like you said, either by beating up – who are they going to beat up more? Are they going to, or are they? Are they going to beat up the Phillies more? Are they going to beat up the Marlins more? Maybe somewhere in the middle? And then when the dust settles by next week, where are things going to stand?
Yeah. And on the Braves rotation, they will not face Fried or Strider. Fried is going Tuesday against Philly. Strider is going Wednesday. So they're going to miss both of them during the trip to Miami. So Miami at least gets a
– that's in Miami, theory – In theory, that's a good thing. Yeah.
In theory, that's a good break on the Marlins front.
You still have to worry about all those Atlanta bats, though. And that's the thing. And especially with a depleted rotation now, no Sandy going in for sure. And what we just talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unfortunate. But again, this is where the 19, not going down from 19 to 13 in terms of how many times you play your division does help. Because in a regular season that we've had in recent years, you'd be looking at, they got to face Atlanta this weekend and then probably a trip up to Atlanta coming up probably toward the end of it. Now that's out of the way and it's only the one time.
Correct.
So that's going to help a little bit for sure.
Correct. Yeah. And then just really quick, just looking through the rest of these playoff teams and their schedules. Again, like I said, Philly has seven more games against Atlanta, including what they're doing right now. The Marlins, it's three with Atlanta, seven with the Brewers, and then six with the Mets, three with the Pirates. Let's see, Arizona has three with Houston, three with the Cubs, two with the Giants, and then three apiece with the Yankees and White Sox, and four with the Mets. And the Cubs have three with Atlanta. Atlanta's going to really be impacting this playoff race. Three with Atlanta, three with the Brewers, and three with the Diamondbacks, and then six with the Rockies, three with the Pirates. So Atlanta literally is playing what looks like basically every three of the four teams that are still involved in the wild card hunt with between the Phillies, the Cubs, and the Marlins. So between that and the Marlins with playing seven against the Brewers, we could see some impact between, heck, who even wins the NL Central, depending on what the Marlins do against the Brewers. The Brewers are only, I think, two games up heading into the week against the Cubs. So they've got, so Central is still very – very well for grabs as well, depending on if Miami does what it needs to do to get into the playoffs.
I'm sure being two people on this show that have covered the Marlins, have been through a lot of the miserable years. You know, just as sports writers, it is good to have something interesting, and I'm sure you're probably in that sense. It's a good thing for you that you've been through finally being able to be part of a playoff hunt.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember famously a little funny inside story we'll share of a year that we were at the winter meetings and Clark Spencer, a former writer for the Herald. I don't crack the joke to all the writers that were off to the postseason. Like, I'm really happy for you guys who know what it's like to cover playoff baseball. Right? I'm really happy because it had been a long time for him. Let me tell you, I think he hadn't been, well, since 03.
Yeah.
Since 03. So you may be, even if they don't make it to the postseason, it's still that just to have that day to day now in September is pretty good. And it's good material for everybody at both on our end and for the fans as well. But let's close it up by talking a little bit about two other playoff teams in the Marlins organization, and that's the minor leagues. Jupiter and Pensacola are both postseason bound. Before we get to that, though, one little note of business. This is going to be the last week you can hear us on Fish Bites as a audio pod. Now, don't panic. That doesn't mean that the show is getting canceled or anything like that. We'll just be a video now, so you'll be able to watch us instead of only listening to us. It won't be available in the pod format, but wanted to let everybody know out there that has listened and watched this show for some time now. We appreciate it. But just a heads up, this week will be the last one on Apple, on Spotify, on all the places that will come at you as a pod. And that's why I called it earlier the Fish Bites Show instead of the Fish Bites mm-hmm. pod. Trying to get in the habit. But going back to Jupiter and going back to Pensacola here, Jordan, two playoff teams already in the minors. Maybe the major league team catches up, but you did a nice thorough breakdown that is available to read at MiamiHerald.com on these two teams, and not just about them making the playoffs because in the minor leagues, but it's more about the prospects. Who is on these teams? If people haven't been really taking a look yet at Jupiter or Pensacola this year and been seeing your weekly minor league report that you do so well, tell them a little bit about why those two teams are in the postseason and who are their top prospects. I see a bunch of good pitchers, of course, at on the Jupiter level. I don't know if you were going to start with them or Pensacola, but let's start with Jupiter.
Yeah,
Noble Meyer and Thomas White and those guys.
Yeah, I'll start with Jupiter. It's their first time making the playoffs since 2012. That was the year that Stanton and Yelich and all of those big names were part of that team when they were the high A affiliate for the Marlins. They're the single A affiliate now. They were demoted down there a couple years ago when minor league baseball did all of its reorganizing. But, yeah, so seven of the Marlins' top 30 prospects, according to MLB Pipeline, play for Jupiter. A lot of them are guys who were just drafted this year, four of those seven, in fact. First-round pick, Noble Meyer. Competitive balance pick, Thomas White. Second-round pick, outfielder, Kemp Alderman. Infielder, Brock Vandenberg are the draftees. And you also have last year's second-round pick, Jacob Miller, a right-handed pitcher. Juan de la Cruz, who was an international signing a couple years back, and infielder Ian Lewis, who was an international signing a couple years back. Those are the main seven. Again, there's been a lot. There's always a lot of movement, but those are the main seven who are still there. I'll talk a little bit mainly about Meyer on the pitching side from the draft picks. He's only pitched, I believe it's seven innings so far. Again, he's a high school kid, played a whole high school season. So he's made three starts there, but again, they're only giving him two to three inning spurts just to make sure his arm's still going and giving him the taste of what professional baseball is like, but they're not stretching him out completely just because of the workload he's had, plus the time off he's had from the end of high school to draft and then getting back in the pro ball. But three starts in Jupiter, he's given up three earned runs on nine hits, struck out nine over seven innings. Thomas White's pitched 3 2/3 innings, only had two starts there. He was a little bit behind Meyer in terms of the ramp up, in terms of getting back. And of the position players, Kemp Alderman, power hitting righty out of Ole Miss. He's struggled overall. He was hitting only .205 since debuting July 26th. But over his last 21 games, his average is up to .247, nine extra base hits in that span, seven doubles, a home run. And again, home runs are hard to hit in those Florida State League ballparks, 12 RBI. And then the other guy who I really want to touch on, Ian Lewis. He's been he's only hitting .225 this year, but he's been really tapping the power this year. He's a little more on the underside. But even with that, 30 of his 95 hits are extra bases, 19 doubles, 6 triples, 5 homers, and he's stolen 33 bases and scored 70 runs. And one of my favorite stats from this year, I think I wrote about it a couple weeks ago. He had a 5 stolen base game without recording a hit. He walked twice and
he
walked twice and got on twice via error and managed to basically steal his way around the base path once he got on base. And the only real comp for that in the big leagues was Ricky Henderson back in the day. I think he walked three or four times and then had a couple times where he stole twice after getting on base. So Ian Lewis, he's the Marlins number 30 prospect. He's one of the up and comers from the Bahamas. He's basically Jazz's little brother, just as a comp in terms of friendships, and Jazz has been watching out for him from the big leagues and giving him advice. So he's a guy who still on the younger side, but definitely one to watch down the road. And then to quickly go into Double-A Pensacola, and remember, the Blue Wahoos won the Southern League last year back when, and Yuri was a big part of that. That's he came back from injury and helped pitch in both of their big series there and was a big reason for them getting into the playoffs, because the way playoffs work for the minor leagues is they break the season up into two halves. The team with the best record in the first half automatically secures the playoff spot. The team with the best record in the second half gets the second playoff spot. So the Blue Wahoos both last year and this year got their playoff spot by being the best team in their division in the Southern League in the first half of the season. So they've had their playoff spot locked up for months. And honestly, they've just kept it rolling all season long. But they have six of the Marlins' top prospects still with them. On the pitching side, it's Patrick Monteverde and Evan Fitterer, catcher Will Banfield, infielders Jacob Berry and Nassim Nunez, and outfielder Victor Mesa Jr. Bunch of names that we've talked about throughout this year and last year as well. A quick note, Jacob Berry, he's on the minor league injured list, so I don't know what his availability will be when the playoffs start for them next week. But still, regardless, he got called up to Double-A midseason, the Marlins' first-round pick last year, hitting .248 there with a .743 OPS, five doubles, five home runs, 22 RBI in 28 games. Victor Mesa Jr., I feel like I talk about this kid every week in my minor league roundup. He's set single-season. Yeah, exactly. No, he hit for a cycle this year, and he set career highs this year with 18 home runs. His previous single-season high was five.
Yeah.
He has 73 RBI, previous high was 71. 72 runs scored, previous high was 66. And he still has a .728 OPS. Monteverde and Nunez were the Marlins All-Star Futures Game representatives.
It's good to see at least one of the Mesa brothers is starting to progress to the point where maybe he's getting closer and closer to potentially to that call-up at some point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I remember how big that was back in the day when they were starting to start this whole rebuild.
Yeah.
And we kind of said it over and over that we had a good feeling Junior would be the one to do it, just because he'd grow up here in the baseball sense and all that. And now you're finally seeing him get closer. That's good. Good to see his strides.
Back to just a quick rundown of these last couple guys. Monteverde and Nunez were the All-Star Futures Games representatives. Monteverde's had a breakout year. He was sort of basically looking like a depth piece his first couple of years. Now this year, 20 starts for Pensacola, sub-3 ERA, 110 strikeouts in 112 innings. Nunez, he's known for his speed and his slip defense. He has 45 stolen bases in 51 attempts. He's starting to show some power on offense. He has four of his six career home runs this year, 11 doubles, 40 RBI, 77 runs scored. And then Will Banfield. It looked like for so long that he was just going to be basically a forgotten piece here. I forget if he was competitive balance pick or second round pick that first year of this organization's drafting. And he's finally putting it together offensively. 22 home runs in Double-A, 73 RBI, 68 runs scored, and he's hitting .264 with almost an 800 OPS. He was barely flirting with 600 OPS for his career heading into this year, and it was his second year in Double-A, and I was like, if he doesn't put something together this year, I don't know if he's going to. And he's
what do you finally, think changed? I mean, has anyone told you what do you think changed that finally? I mean, some guys I know it comes in late, but
So he started showing strides in late August, early September last season. He changed his stance a little bit, started working with their hitting coach Matt Snyder, who is up there at Double-A, was with him last year as well in High A in Beloit. So the two of them worked very closely toward the end of the year, and they figured out things with his stance, and once he started showing that success toward the end of last season, his confidence came back.
Restored, yeah.
Yeah, and between that and his work behind the plate, he's known as a defensive-minded catcher with pop.
Yeah.
So now
yeah, that he's that the problem. Right.
Yeah, no, so now that he's showing both sides of it, it's a matter of when he's able, now it's just a matter of when he's going to be able to move up the levels, because they have Paul McIntosh, I believe he's still up in AAA. And you got to figure out what the Marlins are doing big term, long term in the big leagues with Jacob Stallings and Nick Fortes. That's going to be a very interesting development this offseason. It's just the Marlins catchers, how they plan to address that situation going forward between. I mean, Banfield's not going to be in the big leagues next year. I'm not saying that whatsoever. But seeing if he goes up to AAA next year, which based off what he's done this year, he should be up in AAA next year, what they do with the group above them and what their confidence level is in Banfield for just moving forward long term with what how much they feel like they could potentially use him down the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good turnaround because, again, he's another player that, like you mentioned, there were so many expectations at the beginning when he got drafted, and then the defense was never the issue. We always thought at the beginning, I know some people were even saying, do we have another, defensively at least, do we have another guy kind of like Realmuto at the time that, you know, just that quickness, you know, the pop time, you name it, just to get runners up. But the bat was the question, and for a long time it looked like maybe this kid's never going to put it together. So maybe the change in stance, like you said, I mean, that's good. That adds to that catcher depth, and maybe, you know, that, especially right now, that whole position in flux going into the near future too. That's going to be key. But all right, well, we appreciate everybody as always. Like we said before, for listening, watching this show. Jordan's in Milwaukee. He'll be there at home later on covering the Braves series, and next week. I feel like I'm signing off every episode the same way. The let's see, we'll bring it to you the next week. Tune in, stay, you know, same time, same channel. Let's find out where the Marlins are at a week from now. But again, every like it is, the next game is always the most important game. The next week always the most important week and series for this team as they continue to fight for that playoff spot and down the stretch. And again, it is cool when you have a situation like this and a playoff stretch to cover and to watch. So let's see if they can get through it and land in there and then make it interesting on that 2 out of 3 series potentially with maybe the Cubs, maybe those Brewers that they're facing right now this week. So for Jordan McPherson, who's on the road, I'm Andre Fernandez. Check us out next week when we bring you more Marlins on Fish Bites.